Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and today is May 27th, 2021, and good to have everyone on the call here and people listening in. I'll have the replay up shortly, too, afterward if you weren't able to make it. And, you know, we always have these calls on the second and fourth Thursday of the month. Been doing that for the last 10 years now, I think it is. And so the next ones, if you want to mark your calendar, would be June the 10th and then June the 24th will be our next one. So June 10th and June 24th, and I'll send out an email about those also. So, yeah, just wanted to welcome you, and you're always welcome to email me your questions, and I'm happy to answer them on our call here, and also you can ask them live on our calls here too. So yeah, today I wanted to talk about confidence strengtheners and self-doubt. Last time we talked about confidence killers, so to speak, things that take away from our confidence. So this time I wanted to talk about some confidence strengtheners also, and talk about things like how does confidence come about, and how self-doubt can lead athletes to a lower self-confidence, and, you know, listening to your inner thoughts, those sorts of things, how to do that without judgment. And then just kind of that emotional up and down, riding the waves of emotions, the ups and downs, and being able to sail through that. So we'll talk about those things. Also, more about the confidence destroyers, how they come into play, and warning signals that you can look out for low self-confidence in your athletes. You know, that could lead to, you know, a sense of sadness or depression, too. And it's good to be aware of that. And when you can continue working with them yourselves, and when to also refer out for that. You could continue working with the athlete on their sports, and if it is a serious mental health issue, then you could refer to another health professional too. Some of you I know, like John, are psychologists as well, so you could work with both on that if you're skilled in that area too. So, and then we can talk about how self-doubt affects self-confidence and what questions athletes could ask themselves to shift their thinking. And let's talk about qualities of self-confidence. How does it help in successful performance? And I've done a self-image assessment for athletes, so I can tell you about that and share some of the questions I ask them as well. And, yeah, self-esteem issues is really important, of course, too. And how to change your athlete's weakness into mental strength and build that confidence and self-assurance. Of course, using the three P's that I talk about in my Your Performing Edge, the book and the program, positive images, power words, and present focus. And especially wanted to share with you some exercises for confidence for your athletes and teams. So, yeah, last time we talked about the confidence killers. Just a quick review, things like self-doubts, doubting your ability. You might tend to play hesitantly or not be willing to try new things if there's a lot of self-doubt there. And, of course, that can happen in all sports. I know I'm working with a golfer right now, 16-year-old golfer who is having, who doubts, you know, if he hit a bad shot, let's say into a bunker or a sand pit, the next, you know, he's thinking, is this going to happen again? Is this a trend? Is this what's going to happen throughout the game? And is constantly, you know, doubting himself there. And we're working on being able to take a deep breath and just let that thought go and be able to take a practice, even if you had a bad swing or afterward, take a practice swing or do something that will help remind you that I know how to do this, and then be able to walk on to the next shot. So those kind of things can really help. Some of the confidence killers are irrational beliefs and or, you know, reliance on rituals or kind of items that are going to bring success. You think I have to have these certain pairs of socks or shoes or clothing, and that can, and also need for approval from others. Other confidence killers to watch out for are unrealistic demands, you know, perfectionistic thinking, where an athlete has really high expectations. Often the parents have super high expectations that gets transferred to the athlete, and so their sights are so high that they can never be good enough to please themselves. and another one is all or none thinking. You know, it's either all good or all bad, as opposed to as many shades of success can come in many types and can look many different ways and many different grades of success. And then dwelling on errors, of course, is a big one. So you want to take your focus off. That takes your focus off what you need to do next and those regrets and replays. So those are some of the confidence killers that I just wanted to review with you. And this time, focus more on what we can do with that. One of the things that I think as what we can do and what we can encourage parents to do and coaches to do is to develop the whole person. You know, the athlete needs to have respect for him or herself, not only as an athlete, but also as a whole person. And athlete, you want to have respect for your athletic skills and just... like you need to develop your athletic skills, also we need to continue to develop and nurture the athlete's self-esteem. And so all kinds of things we can do with that. I'll give you some exercises in a moment of things that you can do. But being able to respect yourself as a the athlete can think of themselves as a good student, a good family member, a good person, a good friend, all of those things. And also, and that's along with character building, of course, being able to develop the athlete's character in many different ways, being able to, you know, have that courage to do difficult things and to bounce back, the resilience, all of that is so important, just as much as the focus on winning. And, of course, you want to focus on the process, not the results. And so being able to just be focused on that moment. So that third P I talk about in your performing edge, the present focus, be here now, just be right on, right here, right now in the present moment is so key, and focusing on the process of, say, each individual mile if you're running, each individual pitch if you're pitching, each shot if you're playing basketball, and just saying, you know, even though the stakes are really high right now, thinking about just what's the process of what going through for this pitch and just going through that. You know, golfers need to go through the pre-shot routine. Tennis players take a practice swing ahead of time, that pre-shot routine, regardless of what else is going on, to just go through the basics, the fundamentals of what they're used to. And that's going to lead to that confidence. So, and another thing I wanted to just mention that is really good for us to do and for your coaches and sports parents is that to look at each athlete individually as a valuable asset to themselves or to their team and want to understand the value that they bring to the team. So not making comparisons between them and other people. You're not as good as so-and-so, or especially a sibling. As good as that sibling, it can be a real confidence killer. So and I think encouraging athletes to play freely instead of holding back, you know, that ability to believe in your training and know that you're ready for the game or the race, that can really help an athlete perform optimally. So knowing and believing that the let the athlete know they've done everything to prepare for the event. That gives the athlete a mental edge over competition and increases that athlete's belief in their skills and ability. So that can allow them to play freely and apply these abilities needed during the competition when you have that trust in your training. So, and then of course fear is a big thing, letting go of that fear, being able to take a deep breath and just say, hey, I'm just going to play, do the best I can here. As opposed to fear of making a mistake in the game. So, yeah, being able to just go out there and just go for it. So I think, you know, encouraging the athlete as well as parents and coaches and trainers, we're all responsible for nurturing an athlete's self-esteem that can lead to the self-confidence. So now I wanted to talk more about the exercises and sources of confidence that you can help your athletes to realize, to recognize. First, just kind of give you a little idea of what when athletes ask you, well, how do I feel confident, or how do I move toward that? I think Muhammad Ali's famous quote was, I don't think it's bragging to say I'm something special. So, you know, every athlete can feel like they are special, and they're, you know, some athletes, their confidence is reflected in everything they do. And it's really can be defined as the sureness of feeling that you are up to the task at hand, and that absolute belief in your ability. And so that's what we want to get the athletes to, being able to, to be able to persist even in the biggest setbacks. So, to be able to have that resilience and the quicker bounce back than, say, other athletes. And although confidence is a desirable characteristic, oftentimes the athletes get arrogant or sureness. That's not a good thing, because you can overestimate your abilities in a situation as well. So think of it as like confidence being the guardian angel of sports performance. And that's something that we want to work toward, and it can help us to perform well. When you perform a skill successfully, then you generate that confidence, and you're willing to attempt something slightly more difficult. So that's where we want to be able to have athletes take it step by step, baby steps, to come through and be able to work toward doing something well, and then that's going to build confidence to do something more difficult. So I want to talk about some sources of confidence, where confidence comes from, and then you can help athletes to nurture those sources of confidence. And there's various elements that I've thought about. One is, of course, your performance accomplishments. That's the strongest contributor to self-confidence. When you perform something successfully, then you generate that, you have that sense of, yes, I can do this, and I can do something more difficult. And so what you want to do with athletes and encourage the coaches to do is to organize the training into a series of, you know, steps or tasks that progress gradually. So, of course, sports isn't always like that in games, but in your practice, it can be organized so that they progress gradually to allow the athlete to master each step before progressing to the next, and that's going to really build confidence. So just allowing some kind of accomplishment, you know, and if an athlete is not accomplishing doing well at one particular thing, then it's good to just kind of take a step back and create an easier task that they can do well. And that applies to competitions, too. If a person is having difficulty in a game, you'll be able to go back and just go back to the fundamentals and do what they feel comfortable with first, and then they're going to be able to progress from there. And we're all like that. There's no everyone's human, and we all need those that progression of accomplishment to be able to feel confidence. And another source of confidence is being able to be around the success of others, kind of role models, or that can bolster your confidence. So if you, like, let's say I've done that many times with my running career. If I was running with someone else and they were, I could see, especially if I feel like their abilities are the same as mine or similar to mine, and then I see that they are progressing forward or running faster, then I realize, wow, if they can do it, I can do it. You know, that kind of reaction that you can have. And so being around other people and using those good role models can really help. So it's good to have a team or a group that you work out with and that you can do this with them. And then verbal persuasion is another means of attempting to change attitudes. So, you know, oftentimes, well, as we can do this, and coaches and sports parents can do this, to talk about, you know, I know you can do this, or I believe you've done this many times before. A coach will say in tennis, you know, your swing is really good, or I've seen you be able to handle this situation before. You can do it then, and you can do it now. And so reminding the athlete of their skill level, that they have the skill level, and convincing the athlete that whatever the challenge is ahead, that's within your capabilities. So, you know, saying things like, I know you're a really good player, so just you can keep your head up and play your best. And then encouraging an athlete to repeat what the coach has said over and over again. I know one golfer client I have, a 70-year-old golfer I'm working with, his coach has said, you have a great swing. You know, your swing is really strong. Just keep using it. And so I'm encouraging him, but then he will oftentimes refute that and say, it's not that great. But I'm encouraging him to repeat what the coach has said, repeat that message to himself, so that you can give yourself a form of self-persuasion. So those are some sources of confidence, performance accomplishments, and also being around other people who are successful and who are confident role models can really help. And also that verbal acknowledgement from a coach or an athlete or anyone else that you trust or respect can really help. Another source of confidence I just wanted to mention also with the verbal persuasion, you want to be able to say it in something that you want in a positive sense. And I always say in my book, you know, do say what you do want, don't say what you don't want. So you want to be able to focus and see what it is that you're doing. So when you have an imagery experience, you know, often athletes will recreate the mistake that they just made that's going over and over in their minds. But you want to be able to have that, you know, change the movie in your mind, the successful performance, and have a multi-sensory image through creating mental representations or, you know, mastering a task. So, you know, what you see is what you get. Often you can't guarantee that, but of course the more you see it, the more you see it correctly and see it over and over in your mind, then you're reinforcing those neurological responses. You're actually changing the brain and being able to move forward and represent that. You can replicate it when the real situation comes up. So, and a couple other sources of confidence I wanted to mention are emotional states. So, of course, that's how you control the emotions associated with competition, you know, that anxiety or excitement. And, you know, of course, that self-doubt always comes in. You know, we're human beings, and we feel that. And it's going to be there, so it's good to tell athletes that that's something that will come, and you know, to expect that. It's just how loud, you know, it's like a radio. You can turn down the volume on that. How loud is that voice in your brain? And being able to tell yourself that, yeah, everyone has this, you know, those doubts. And that's okay. It can be just a small voice, or turn down that volume, or change the channel, like a radio channel, to something that you can, to a source of, you know, picture in your mind when you have done well. So it's really essential to help your athletes control their thoughts and emotions. And I'm going to show you some exercises how to do that in just a moment. Just wanted to give you one other source of confidence, and that is, of course, your physical state. That can reduce feelings of confidence. It can reduce the feelings of confidence first if you have muscle tension, or you know, those butterflies in your stomach. A lot of athletes, some athletes even throw up before a race or competition because they're so nervous, and that's. That can happen. You can have heart palpitations, all those things. And it's good for each athlete to know what are your physical sensations that can happen. And then be able to see those, whatever it is that you have, just remind yourself that, hey, this is just a sign that I'm excited, psyched, and I'm ready for the event. But this can facilitate my performance. And so we'll talk about that in a moment, too, with some different, like, breathing techniques can really help, just five breaths, you know, breath in, breath out, just relaxing, letting go, or thought stopping kind of thing, or thought changing can really help. Thought shifting, I call it, being able to replace something negative with a helpful thought that is comforting to you. So now I just wanted to remind you also that there's a large number of studies, research in this area that show that high levels of confidence there, of course, they're associated with great performances, and most of the time athletes need that confidence to be able to perform well. Sometimes it happens, great performances happen even in spite of low confidence. It's just something really wonderful happen, but most of the time you want to be able to generate that confidence, help them, and so that confidence, as I mentioned, can come from within yourself, from social support, from a coach or teammates or a parent, and it can help you get through the stress. So let me talk a little bit about exercises that can help with self-confidence and confidence strengtheners here. And one is to be able to, I call it the, you know, kind of putting a spotlight on your, on a good performance. So you can, the purpose of this is to recreate a mental state that's associated with past performance success, and it'll help you in, you know, bridging that gap between your ability and your confidence. So imagine a big here's what, how you would take your athlete through this. Just imagine a huge spotlight or a big light out in front just of you. Just imagine it's on the floor about 3 feet in front of you, this spotlight coming down, and the light beam is about, you know, say 4 feet in diameter or so. And then you think back to a time in your sports when you were performing really well, and perhaps think of something, you know, one of your peak performances, and then each thing that you did brought about a successful outcome, and everything just flowed without too much effort. And then when you're thinking, you're looking outside yourself, so you're looking into this area, spotlight, imagining yourself in the spotlight ahead of you. So then bring in all five senses and notice, it's kind of like you're looking at yourself through a camera lens, and see yourself doing really well, and you can see the audience perhaps applauding and saying, hey, you're doing great. And then see yourself in, now the second step is see yourself inside the circle. Go ahead and imagine stepping inside that circle, that spotlight, and doing really well. Imagine what the you inside the circle is, what you're seeing, what you're feeling, what you're experiencing, what you're hearing. And really taste it, that success. And so you step into the spotlight and become fully associated with it. So you're experiencing these events through your own eyes and right now in the present. So hearing and feeling, seeing, experiencing everything from within. So first you're doing it kind of in a dissociating, in a distance, watching yourself in the spotlight. And that can give you some perspective. You might think, oh, that person needs to improve their form, or that's really good form that they're having right now, and you can see what that person is doing. Sometimes you can get a really good perspective on what they're doing. I worked with a tennis player doing this, and she could see herself performing her serve, just getting it just spot on right in the square, and being able to manage it so well and manage the stress and all. So she would see herself in the spotlight first, like she's observing herself, and then at the second step, seeing herself coming in to, you know, stepping right into the box there, the server's box, and being able to serve and feel her arm, you know, throwing the ball up and then feeling the arm serving. And so it was being able to come together and do really well. I know some of you, Anna L. in France, that you might be working with tennis players, or I know June in Texas, you're working with equestrian riders, so you could have athletes imagine being on a horse there and riding really well. Or John in Omaha, you can see your athletes, you know, swimming, doing all the different sports. So you could imagine that. I know, Dave, you're up in Utah. You could imagine your athletes out on track or throwing the javelin throw. And at first, imagine looking into yourself in a spotlight, and then, or through a camera lens, and then see yourself coming into that, stepping into it yourself. And just notice what that feels like so that you can reproduce it whenever your confidence, whenever you need an extra confidence boost. So that's one exercise to do. Another exercise, so that's the spotlight exercise. And another one is to be able to have a sort of two columns, be able to have two types of feeling. So you take a piece of paper and put a line down the middle, and this is to help you achieve a greater sense of stability in your confidence, and to know what causes it to fluctuate. So take two columns, and then in the first column put high high confidence situations. And then the second column on the right put low confidence situations. So, or you could say, I feel strong when, I feel confident when, and then fill in the blank on the left side, several of those. And then on the right-hand side put, I feel weak when, and then put, put those situations. So on the left side, put list all the situations where you feel completely confident. You know, maybe situations where you're, you know, where you've got lots of sleep the night before and you feel good and you're, had good workouts right before the competition. And, or even these could be situations that with practice or competition, you know, where you feel strong, your body's performing well, no kinks or aches or pains, and just being able to imagine all the situations where you have that high confidence. And then on the right-hand side, it lists those other low-confidence situations, maybe things that, you know, make you feel uneasy or things, you know, maybe you got to a practice or a competition late or something's not working well with your body. All those things could be on the right-hand side. And then you, so by clearly identifying these situations make you feel uneasy, that's the first step toward greater confidence. And then I'll show you what to do with these in some other exercises here. So it's good to, and then what you want to do, of course, is highlight, do the things that help you feel more confident on the left. And then you can take those situations where you do feel confident and you can put those in your spotlight exercise, the first one that I described. And then another exercise is what I call power words. You know, for my Your Performing Edge program, your power words exercise would be to, purposes to kind of affirm that you do have the skills, the abilities, positive attitudes and beliefs that are the building blocks of success. So those statements, you want to choose statements that are short and in the present tense, and highlight good positive emotions. You want to make them believable. So you don't want to say things necessarily like, I am the world's greatest athlete, but things like, I am moving toward success. You know, the ing at the end of the verb really helps, so that, you know, you might not be there yet, but you could say, I'm getting closer to my goal, or I'm becoming a strong athlete. And so you want to be able to use these confidence statements, the power word phrases, especially when you're feeling low confidence in certain situations. And so things like, you could say, you know, like skiing, my timing is always spot on. It was like a javelin thrower, you know, for you, Dave, up in Utah, you could say, I'm throwing accurately and strong and with strength. If it's a basketball player, you could say, you know, it's just me in the basket. All I focus on is me in the basket, getting the ball in. Those kind of things. With a runner, you might say, it's just take it one step at a time. Or this is easy, this is fun. So just making a list of, say, five positive statements, the power word statements, and then read them to yourself every night before you go to bed and each morning when you wake up. And then as you repeat these, they'll become more embedded in your mind and really have a strong effect on your performance. Another exercise I wanted to emphasize is just using the power of music. So music has really powerful properties. I'm a musician myself. I play guitar and flute and piano. I know some of you might be musicians as well. But even if you're not, it doesn't matter. We all appreciate music. And so I would say that music has really unique properties, and it can inspire and motivate you and improve your confidence. So, for instance, I have always had one song and one CD that I would play on the way up to a race every time, and it just got me jacked up and amped up, excited for the race. And so it gets you into a certain mood. So you want to be able to have tunes that have maybe good inspirational lyrics or extra strong musical associations that you can use to increase your confidence before competitions. So, and you can use music for different things. If you want to, relax and keep your physical, anxiety down, you can select music with a low tempo, maybe below 110 beats per minute. But if you want to psych up, go to a higher tempo, over 110 beats per minute, something like that, and build up to a tempo of, say, 130 beats per minute before competing. So that's a good way to get yourself kind of ready to go. So music can be really powerful that way. Or if you're not allowed to use music during, while it could be before a competition, during a competition, you're not allowed to, but you can still have that music in your head and be singing that song. Excuse me. Frog in my throat here. So using that music can really help. And then another technique would be if you're in a team sport where you need to have a team that you're competing against, knowing that your other opponent on the other side is human and they put on their pants one leg at a time just like you, and that they have fears and doubts just like you, it's good to be able to acknowledge that yourself, knowing that they are susceptible to anxiety and fatigue and indecision. So if you spend your time, if you do end up thinking about your components, focus on, weaknesses that they might have that you could easily compete with. And so, if it's a team sport, you want to study video footage of your opponents, say, and analyze what causes them things to go wrong for them, and then it may be that they can't perform under certain conditions. Like, actually, I was at an example. I was at the Athens Olympics in 2004. I was working there with a pole vaulter client, and I also watched the Olympic marathon. And Paula Radcliffe was running there. She was, expected to win the race or do really well, but in the heat and humidity of the Athens Olympics, that was a distinct weakness of hers, so other athletes were able to do better. And so it's good to know if an athlete has a certain weakness, then you can be able to pass them or do better than them in that situation. I know one race I was in, with a 10K, I noticed the athlete ahead of me, I had never beaten her before, but I was coming up on her and she was holding her side. Her hand was up holding her ribs, and so she was having some, maybe a breathing issue and a difficulty with that. And so she was able to, I could tell that she was having a problem, and so that really showed me that this is the time to get build up my strength and to be able to pass her because she was in difficulty. So of course, you never want to wish ill on your other opponents or your other athletes, but what you can do is just be able to excel at the time when your opponent is weak, And so I was able to, I just came up slowly. I didn't want to accelerate too quickly because I'd, you know, get into oxygen debt. But I would just watch her and watch her every move and look for signs of that she was not doing well, signs of weakness. And then I got right behind her, and then I rested. I just took a moment to kind of gain my confidence and take a few deep breaths. And then I said, okay, now's the moment, and I went and passed her definitively as I went by so that she would hopefully not realize she couldn't catch me. And so then I was able to go by and do really, and then win the race. So in my age group, and so that was an exciting thing. So that was an example of kind of noticing the weakness in other athletes. When you're competing like that, you want to be able to notice what is it that they have difficulty with. Maybe they have difficulty with heat or the distance or something that isn't working well for them. And you can just notice little signs in their body or facial expressions or their energy. So, of course, you want to... you know, one example also is that in team sports, you know, identify players that easily get wound up and find out what triggers them. You know, one example, you know, Chris John McEnroe is a big example who would get triggered all the time in tennis and would argue with the referees and get bad calls. Every call against him, you know, was an unfair referee decision, he thought. And so you want to make a point of, I think it's good to make a point of being friendly and respectful toward the officials and the referees. That's a better approach because at a subconscious level, at least maybe they are more likely to make decisions in your favor, you know, in a 50-50 call kind of thing. They just they'll look more kindly on you. So that's good to know, to be able to, I think, you know, be respectful and kind to the officials because they're human too, and they can make decisions in all kinds of ways. So those are some examples of some exercises I wanted to share with you on things that you can do with to be able to manage confidence. One is that spotlight exercise, to be able to put a spotlight in front of you and observe yourself in the spotlight or in a camera lens kind of thing, looking at yourself in the distance, playing confidently, and then step into the lens or step into the spotlight and see yourself there and notice exactly what you're doing, what you're seeing, hearing, feeling. So you become fully associated, experiences them through your own eyes. So spotlight exercise, and then the left and right exercise on the page, confident situations and high and low confidence situations, and compare those two and notice what makes you have high confidence, what makes you have low confidence, and then be able to, that can lead you to correcting situations on the right-hand side with the low confidence, and really highlighting the ones on the left side, the high confidence situations. And then you can do your power words to be able to highlight to help you with when you're feeling low confidence. And then being able to notice weaknesses in your opponent and be able to, that's when you want to excel and move forward. And then also, yeah, the power of music and sound, being able to play music that helps you. I guess one other exercise, of course, is the most important one, I think, is visualization, that, you know, using the techniques going through the modules. You can always go back through the modules there and look at the specific techniques I've showed you there and the chapters in the book. Chapter 6 in my book talks about, you know, imagery that I sent you. and be able to go through an imagery exercise with your athletes and make them those custom audios. I think it's important to, within each session or after the session, you know, make an audio visualization exercise for your athletes that is about the learning of that specific session. So not just a general one, but whatever you talked about in that session, that particular session there, create an audio for that. It's basically taking the notes that you've taken from the audio, from the session, what you talked about, and then just putting that into, you know, speaking more slowly and emphasizing those things and having them imagine them, having them go through them in their mind, and be able to help them to relax and see that this is all possible. So that way you can reinforce it and help them personalize the things that they just learned. You know, for instance, I just was working with a rower, a guy on a crew team. I am now, and he's having difficulty with, you know, just feeling balanced in the boat when he goes fast. And so having him just experience that, you know, feeling solid and feeling balanced and being able to move forward and to be feel real solid in the boat as he's moving forward. That's, you know, just that simple exercise like that. It doesn't have to be complicated at all. It's better to just choose one thing that you're working on, I think, and then create an audio around that. And then the second concept that you work on, create another audio. Sometimes you might want to do two audios for, you know, one for each topic, for what it is that they are, what you're focusing on there. Shorter is better, I think. Even 3 to 5 minutes is good for an audio. It doesn't have to be, it could be 10 or 15 minutes, but oftentimes you increase the chances that an athlete will use it, that audio, if it's shorter. And you can just, and then it's something that they could use not only right before they go to sleep at night, but in the morning, but right before their practice and their competitions. And then you want to encourage the athlete to create a playlist, a whole folder with all of your audios in it so that they can have a menu of these. And those audios, visualizations that you take people through can really form the background, the foundation for your work with an athlete. So I know one athlete I worked with, for example, a friend of his purchased a session. It was just so clients can come for you from all different sources. And this one client, a guy found my name and wanted to, he was a golfer, he wanted his friend to give his friend some help, and so he purchased a session for his friend, and he contacted me. And I figured it would be just that one session, but he really enjoyed the work that we had and wanted to continue on. And so for maybe a couple more sessions, and we did an audio visualization with it, with each session for, you know, like the pre-shot, after a bad shot routine, a lot of, and that's a good one to do for any sport, after a bad mistake or something, what do you do, what kind of create a routine for that. So we worked on that. And each time he's become kind of positively addicted to the session, to those audios now, and says, you know, say right away, you're going to create me another audio, right? And so that's what he looks forward to. And that's what keeps him coming back to the sessions, is those audios, because he knows he's going to get something very, very personal and something that can really improve his confidence. And something he used to, he said every time he'd hit bad shots, he would just really punish himself out on the golf course. And now he is able to just say, okay, that happened, and then be able to move on to the next thing and the next hole, and not let it, and be able to recover quicker, and that it doesn't bother him as much. And he said the audios that we're doing and the work we're doing together is really, really helping. So just want to encourage you to do the same thing with your athletes. Even if you don't have time to do the audio during the session, sometimes you can do it there right after finishing talking with them during the, within the session, or sometimes they just want to spend the whole time talking with you, and then, and just, you know, I don't mind taking the time afterward to do the audio after the session and then just emailing it to them. I encourage you to do it right away afterwards so that you remember what you talked about, and you can do it and be, then it's much easier for you to, because you've got it fresh in your mind. Do the audio and then email it to them right away. That way they're, because they're expecting that, wanting that from you, and that builds trust that you are able to do the work with them, and that you care about them, and that you're following up with them. And then always, I think a good idea at the end of the session is to say, okay, this is good, what we worked on here, and next week we'll work on, you know, this topic, and come up with something specific. Of course, you can go with whatever is on their mind at that time, too, but it's good to give them something to look forward to say, here's something that we'll talk about here next time, or and also give them a sense of hope that, you know, I see you're improving with this process here using what we're, the tools that we're learning. You know, give them some positive reinforcement and then a sense of hope that we're moving in the right direction, that kind of thing. It's also good, another tip I wanted to give you is if you get, you know, sometimes you'll get some really positive feedback from them, or like a father emailed me and said his son, just shot, after a session, shot his lowest score ever at a tournament, and he says, we attribute a lot of that to our work with you. So he was saying our sessions were really working, and so I just simply emailed back and said, I really like your, thank you for your comments, your nice words. Would it be okay for me to use your comments here so that other people can benefit from this? So he said, sure, you know, so asking for permission to use his comments. I'd say just call them comments or quotation as opposed to testimonial. Testimonial kind of, that's what it is basically, but it sounds more conversational to just say, use your comments. And most people will say yes. They're very happy to, because they want to help other people as well. So I encourage you to, if you get positive comments like that, it's okay to do that, to use that. Or if you have a client in a session that's had a really good result, you could just do a quick video of them saying something about that your sessions have been really helpful, and here's what came out of it, you know, shooting your lowest score, that kind of thing. Yeah, and then, so that's okay. It's just, it's always good to, and then get written permission from them, or just saying in an email that it's okay to use this as a, use those comments so that you have that as a record there. But most of the time, that works out just fine. And that way, that can help you with your reputation and with your credibility, and help you get more clients, too, because that's what I'm here for, too, to help you to get more clients and get more business. So great. If you have any questions or other suggestions for our next meeting, or our next call, feel free to email me. I'm here for you. And we'll look forward. I'll have this replay up shortly. And I'll send you the things we talked about here, the exercises, and the sources of confidence. And you can tell, let your athletes know that you can use this. They can use these, all of these exercises and sources of confidence for their sports and also for, of course, everything, and for their work or their schoolwork in life. So this works for so many things and can give them life skills for lifelong. So next, our next session, again, will be the June the 10th and then June the 24th. So, yeah, June 10th and then June 24th, you can put your calendar on there. It'd be great to have you join us then. Thank you to all of you who joined us. And we'll talk, those of you listening in the background, June and John and Dave and Anna L., and we've got Greg and George and Farley and lots of folks here. So good to talk with you. And I think we're coming up on the Memorial Day weekend here. So all of you have a good weekend. And it's good that things are beginning to open up now with our sports and with the pandemic easing a little bit in some places. So I wish you all a good week. And I'll have the recording up shortly. And we'll talk soon. Thanks so much. Thanks for coming in. Always an honor to serve you. Thanks. Talk soon. Bye.